Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, we're an exciting team that we're heading in the right direction. You got a talented roster that's going to be talented for a long period of time.
Yeah, I think you should support the Bears. They got wonderful colors. They got guys like DJ, Keenan, Rome, and Tyreek, and Tez, Montez, and all these amazing people, but amazing athletes. And Jalen Johnson, I can keep going. Tory Taylor, the Aussie. I can keep going. You know, we're on the way up in the progress.
Well, they'd be part of the best fan base in the world if they join the Chicago Bear fan base. So that's number one. You know, we're a team on the rise. You know, so I think it's a good time to be a Bear fan and join us.
And as we continue to grow, you know, and start making deeper and deeper runs into the postseason, I think it's going to be a team that everyone's going to follow. I've been a part of an organization that you moved around the country and the world. You did not see that logo much at all, and now you see it everywhere. So now we want to be on that same path.
Because we the best team out there. One of the original teams, maybe the original team. We're here. We're going to bring a lot of energy and stuff, so and hopefully we'll win.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
Charter franchise of the NFL, absolutely the original team. That's totally fine. That's a question that the Bears were asked quite a bit in London today, is why should the international fans be rooting for them in this game? This is a fun conversation. Lou Kanellis was there for it. You can watch Lou on Fox 32. He's the lead sports anchor there. A longtime friend of the station, especially considering their studios are literally across the street from ours. Hey, Lou.
What's happening, Lawrence?
Hello, Lou Kanellis. Looking forward to being
there. He is.
What's up, buddy? I'll be part of your the 5 p.m. show on Fox on Sunday. Looking forward to hanging out and being part of that. Are you going to be asleep by then? In terms of the time difference, Lou, to your knowledge?
Are you kidding me? I'm in. My body clock is adjusting. I'm in London where things don't get started till 9 o'clock.
So there you go.
We'll see. There it is right there. So what do you think is interesting about this trip that the Bears are taking? Because I gotta tell you, so you're always working and travel messes with you. Why did the Bears decide to do it this way instead of maybe waiting until Thursday to leave for London?
Well, I think for two reasons, Lawrence. And it's a really good question. And number one, I think that truly they feel, even though there's really no history that shows that it's better off for the team to fly out, if you look at past records of teams that have played in these games in London, there's really no proof out there that says, well, if you fly out on Monday, you have a better chance of winning on Sunday. Having said that, every player I talk to, so I talked to Keenan Allen, Cole Kmet, I talked to Coach Eberflus today, and everyone felt like today the body was back to normal. Kevin Byard, who I do on talk to every Tuesday. So I got the, what's it called? Harbury Manor is where they're staying, which is about 35 miles outside of central London. And I got there early this morning so I could get together with Byard, because yesterday we were supposed to talk, and he wasn't feeling well. So when we got together today, I said, are you feeling okay? He goes, oh, yeah, yeah. Yesterday, it just really hit me. So I think that, and for anyone that's traveled internationally, you know how the body clock is. So it took them all a day to feel physically okay, so that then today they had a good workout, really a walkthrough, but tomorrow and Friday they'll truly have a workout. That's number one, Lawrence. Number two, I truly believe that coach wants these players to enjoy London as well. A bunch of guys got out last night. Cole Kmet told me he was going out again tonight. He wants them to experience the chance to see London. Kevin Byard's played in this series, the international series, three times. Absolutely loves the city. And when you have veterans like that telling the younger guys, hey, this is something you'll never forget. It's more than just football. It's seeing another part of the world. I truly believe that that was a huge factor in this team being happy that they're here. They really want to go to Madrid next year because, you know, the international series moves to Madrid next year.
Wow. And the Bears ownership embracing the brand, getting some play over there in Europe. I kind of love it. All right. So Hanbury Manor, where the Bears are staying, that's that land has been owned by that family and those people since the year 1500. The house was built in 1890. That was the new house, the new grand house. What? How was it to be on the grounds over there at Hanbury Manor to talk to the Bears, Luke and Ellis?
I'll tell you what, Speaks, you really have to appreciate English architecture. And not only was it bought and purchased and owned by the family you discussed, do you know that the man that owned the estate, the grounds, is an English cardinal and author named Reginald Pole? So everywhere you walk on the grounds, there are street signs that say Poles, named after Ryan Poles, of course, right? It's spectacular. I think it's beautiful. It's, like I said, 35 miles outside of central London. If you're a fan listening and you think you're going to go see the Bears, you've got no shot. It's a fortress, and there is more security than you could ever imagine. And it takes 2 hours to get there. So why blow 2 hours going way out to only be told at the gate, turn around and go back to where you came from?
You're more Mr. Worldwide than Pitbull, Lou. Like, you've been to a lot of places across the globe. With the bye week coming up and you working like 18 hours on game days, are you just going to stick around after this is over?
You know what, Lawrence? I'm not. I miss my daughter. I miss my wife. I'm going back home after the game. I was fortunate in that I spent some time in Greece this past summer. So I've done the international trip for the year. And I'll come back. I do regret, you know, my wife will tell you that she asked if she could come with, and I yelled at her and told her no, because I had work to do. And I regret her not being alongside, because if you have not been to London, this city is spectacular.
What have you seen, Lou? I saw some video of you and Cassie in front of the bridge. Is that London Bridge? Was it falling down? These are the questions.
Yeah, I was at London Bridge and it was falling down. I saw the Tower of London. I'll go to Big Ben tomorrow. I can't wait because I've never. So I came out here, guys, in 2011 when the Bears were here, and I remember a lot of it, but I did not go to St. Paul Cathedral. I can't wait to go there. And then, listen, here, one of my favorite parts of this trip is on Friday night, Cassie Carlson and I are going to tape Bears Blitz that airs on Fox 32 Chicago at 8:30, and we're doing it at the Greenwood Sports Pub, which is party central for Bears fans. The Bears, the organization, is putting its flag there. This is where all Bears fans will congregate. Alumni will be there. Pina Tillman, Zach Miller, a bunch of the players. They'll be signing autographs. We're doing our show there, and that's on Friday night. I can't wait to have some pints with Bears fans.
God, I hope there are some Bobs there. Hope there are some, you know, just hardcore dyed in the wool.
Grabowskis?
Yeah, I hope we got some of those. I mean, there'll be some on the field, as we know, but I hope we got some.
I also think it's interesting because of the legacy of the Bears in London going back 40 years, that there are a bunch of people who live there that have adopted the Bears. And so I know that that Jacksonville, that this is their second home now, but I expect it to be raucous for Bears fans, not who travel, but folks who actually live there.
Lawrence, you could not be more right. I'll tell you what. Just walking through the streets yesterday when I was in central London shooting, people are wearing it. It's almost like, oh, my team is in town, and now I'm wearing my uniform. I'm wearing my Ditka sweater. They have come out with the Bears gear, and obviously it will get there will be more and more over the next couple of days as fans make their way into town. But Kevin Warren referenced it today when he talked to the media. He said that there are 40 million Bears fans around the world, and I think it will be a decided home field advantage for the Bears on Sunday.
Lou, we really appreciate you stepping out of dinner to talk with us, man. And thanks so much for painting a really cool picture over there in London. Have fun, be safe, and get home to your family when it's all done.
Thanks, boys. Always a pleasure to talk to you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Lou. There have been 36 regular season games in London, and Eberflus kind of referred to some of the data and how it wasn't as conclusive.
I don't know if there's really if there's enough to say one way or the other.
19 times teams arrived on different days. 19 times out of the 36, and of those 19, the team that arrived earlier won 12 of the 19. That doesn't really do a lot for you just in that. I suppose you could, you know, look at some of the data within those 12 of the 19 games. We've got the Bears last time. They went in 2019. Matt Nagy got there. They practiced at Halas Hall on Wednesday and Thursday, took a Thursday night flight, had one practice in London on the Fridays. As you mentioned the other day, Lawrence, Jacksonville's always there.
Yeah.
They've played 11 games in their 10 trips to London in the last decade. They were there twice last year, won both their games there last year.
Will be there twice this year.
Right. Because Shad Khan is trying to establish that extended footing out there for Jacksonville.
Let me ask you guys this. And we'll go around the room here. And if the mob wants to play along, feel free to.
Good. Well, because Shane really didn't enjoy my London Bridge question. You know?
He did not.
Yeah, he put his head in his hands. He shook his head in his hands.
I think we're bigger than that. We're better than that. That was right there for you.
I'm right here.
That was right there
I'm
for you.
I'm clearly not better than that. Deal with it.
Can I ask you?
I think you're better than that.
Before I ask the other question that I had written down, can I just say that this is why I do appreciate working with Chris Tannehill again, is because I have already tired of London Calling being the only piece of music that is used for describing teams going over to play. I think it's so rote and so hacked. Like, I hate it. So
that's a music song by The Clash. If anybody, tell Danny. Somebody call Danny and tell him it's by The Clash.
So the fact that Tanny brought us back with Fergie's London Bridges, I thought was really dope. Because you can play around with it and do some other stuff.
Yeah, I knew Speaks was going to ask the question, too, so it was like a little, you know, breadcrumb there. And also, at the top of the hour, came back with some Oasis underneath the, you know, Why Root for the Bears thing. Oasis, very much in the news.
Anybody fancy some lasagna?
Oasis is going to be at Soldier Field next August, too, right?
They are. Well, we'll see.
Right, you're right. If the brothers don't fight, then...
I don't trust Noel and Liam to stay together that long again.
It's a problem. So here's the original question that I wanted to ask you guys. Because you heard what Lou said about the players wanting to go to Madrid, and we've had a game now in Brazil. Obviously, London is a big thing. Germany is a big thing. If we gave you the discretionary income to be able to go to an international game and you would get to choose where the game is played, where would you want to go and what would you want to see?
Wait, give it to me again. Bears anywhere.
Bears anywhere and you get to go.
Damn.
Internationally, where would you want to go?
I mean,
if the answer is London, the answer is London.
No, hell no. I mean, there's a lot of places I haven't been internationally that I kick myself for not having been. Like, I want to go to Japan to go see the Cubs next year because I've never been to Japan.
Shane, but GoFundMe.
We'll get a GoFundMe going for you right now. What's it like? $5,000?
Maybe Bleacher Jeff can bring me. I'd love to see Bleacher Jeff get to go. It's a lovely man.
He did. They hit the mark.
They hit the mark? He's going?
I can't believe you didn't see how mad people on the internet are about it.
I saw that they were mad about it even as a beginning idea. I didn't realize he got there.
Yeah, he got there.
Good for him.
Congratulations.
Is it fair to say like a football game would ruin any international travel experience? Like, do I have to go to the game?
Yes.
If we could say, hey, the game's going to be there, but you don't have to go to it.
No, Tanny, you got to go to the game. All right. The game is the hook. This isn't just right, a boondoggle.
One quarter, then I can leave.
No, you got to stay. You got to stay.
Seriously,
for the whole thing.
Can you imagine like traveling across the world? Hey, let's go to Spain. You want to go to a bullfight? Nope, I'd rather go see the Bears play.
Well, I the next place, you know, if I get a chance to travel internationally, the wife and I, maybe even our kid, don't know if she's old enough yet to like go through and really appreciate the international experience. I've been wanting to go to Italy my whole life, so I would love to make that a destination.
Shane, you just travel internationally.
Yeah, I mean, I've got two. So recency bias, I would love to see a football game in the mountains where the white houses are in Greece, like carved into the Mediterranean, like right in the Mediterranean.
Also, got to build a stadium there too. Taddy wants to go to Italy. They can just play in the Colosseum. Yeah, there's enough of it left.
I'm assuming that we're building a football field wherever we go. And then my top one, though, next to the hot springs in Iceland.
Oh, I think that would be like, so cool.
A football game in Reykjavik would be incredible. And that from here is a very cheap 5-6 hour flight.
That's
and their hot dogs are supposed to be incredible.
That's a great choice, Shane.
Hot dogs of Iceland?
Reykjavik. Yeah.
That's a really great choice because you know people wouldn't even think of it as like a destination to go to.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's a shorter flight than going to London.
You just blew my mind with that one because like if I'm always thinking like tropical. Like, that would be the fun thing. Like, I always loved when they actually had the Popeye's Bahamas Bowl. That, to me, just struck me as perfection.
Oh, sure.
Football, chicken, in the Bahamas.
Well,
Let's go.
How about college hoops in Maui? Like, Lahaina. And I know Lahaina is trying to do a rebuild after the devastation that found its way there within the last couple of years. But, I mean, yeah, so something like that in terms of the tropical. But, yeah, Reykjavik sounds awesome.
Reykjavik. I think that's the winner. I called it a DePaul tournament in the Virgin Islands. And I was like, man, this is really tremendous. It would really open up, but a football game in Iceland would be so dope.
I think Boog does college hoops in the Bahamas every year, and they do that event.
It's a good choice.
That's how he kicks off his college hoop season.
Fairly easy to get to and from in the Bahamas. And
I've always wanted to go to the Galapagos Islands and see the different stages of evolution there. Can they put a football stadium there?
No.
No,
I feel like that would probably be the encroachment on nature there.
So?
Probably you don't want to do it.
Mm. Yeah, that's probably
true. But I mean, you start looking at some of the other places, like them going to Brazil, and there are problems in Brazil with like the condition of the field. The guys were slipping and sliding all over the place there. But the idea of opening up South America, maybe a game in Colombia, maybe a game in Venezuela.
I've never been to Spain, and the wife and I are talking about trying to make Spain happen. So Madrid, I mean, sounds pretty great.
I think there should be a franchise in Mexico City, but that's just me. Like, if they're looking to expand.
Could they, like, play a game in the ancient ruins down there in Riviera Maya, with where they actually used to, like, you know, sacrifice people in the name of sport, you know?
Better not.
Tanny, I'm really with you, though, when I stop and pause and think about it. This all sounds ridiculous to add football to. I mean, I love football, but if like we don't need to impose our ugly Americanism on these incredible locales, do we? Yeah. I mean, it's kind of what we do.
Like,
it's kind of our thing.
Like, to be honest, if it's the Bears, yeah, so you're watching, but you're probably watching from a bar in the neighborhood. Like, I don't need to go to the stadium. Like, I would love to experience it with the locals because most of the people that you're going to be surrounded by at the game are most likely people coming from America.
And look, the places that we have named outside of Iceland, there's huge soccer matches in Madrid.
Yeah.
Okay. So
those stadiums are there for
you. There's a lot of places where the same thing with Italy and their Serie A there. So like there are some of these places have stuff that's already built in and you just have to tap into it. But I do love that the expansion will allow us to kind of think. I've really enjoyed the games in Monterrey or Mexico City. Like Mexico City to me, it would be the perfect place to put a franchise.
Mexico City, unbelievably thriving food scene these days. Like for foodies and for culinary delights. My brother, who's the chef, says it's like an incredibly awesome food scene these days.
Now, you are going to have to deal with some issues that you have to deal with when you're in Denver, and even worse, because I think Mexico City is 7,500 feet above sea level. So, you know, those 68, 69-yard field goals got a shot there. The points go up there for sure.
It's kind of like the 61-yarder I tried in Tecmo the other day.
What were you thinking?
It's 1993.
Kickers can't do that back then, even in video games.
They barely can now. But they can now, at least. Yeah, I had no business trying that. No, I like this as a concept. Like, where would you attach the travel to? You know, it's one of the beautiful things about the Field of Dreams game, and then the game in Alabama. That Rickwood game was just incredible.
Well, then let me add one of my favorite international cities, NFL game in Montreal. Let's go. You talk about a place where you can have a great time.
You love it there.
That's where you'll find me.
Is Mark Trestman going to be there?
Maybe. That's where you'll find me when I'm done with the industry or the industry is done with me.
Well, you could call Canadian Football League games up there.
CFL is a lot of fun.
Yeah, and the Alouettes, to Shane's point. That's where Trestman, like, he dominated. He dominated up there. It's when Phil Emery said, that's my guy.
I gotta see if I can go see the Blackhawks up there. That's really the only place you can see them. I kid. The people in the comments are not kidding, though. Not our comments. Dude, our comments are fine.
When Jay Zawoski yesterday told us that a lot of the CHGO fans get confused and think that they're CHSN, and they're like, why can't I watch the Blackhawks on your channel? I don't understand.
Like, that's not us.
That's not us.
That's not what we're doing.
We do have the CH in common, but it takes a big left turn right there.
It sure does. We will get back to talking about Bears on the field.
And we got to talk about CHSN a little bit later as well.
We promise that we will do both of those things. But in the next segment, let's talk about the quarterback and the wide receiver getting on the same page, having a little fun with each other too. We'll share next here on The Score.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're going to go to Caleb Way.
Second down and six. Williams play fake. Now throws wide open. It's DJ Moore. The former Carolina Panther is in for a Bears touchdown. 34 yards. Williams to Moore.
So DJ Moore, a couple weeks ago, talking about we're going to do it the Caleb Way as they made the adjustment after the signals were crossed. And then this past week, when everything worked out beautifully, DJ Moore with the two touchdowns in the first half, the big day, he talked openly about just what a good mood he was in and brought his two kids to the podium after the game and all that. So it's an opportune time to check in with those guys about the growing chemistry between the number one wide receiver and the kid quarterback, because they'll be effusive after a win, don't you think, Lawrence? Let's check in, shall we? Here's DJ Moore talking about his growing chemistry with Caleb Williams.
It's amazing. You know, he's taking those strides that he needs to. He's been bossy lately, telling us that we need to be on the details, but we really do for him to be the best player he needs to be. So, but yeah, I think that's it.
DJ, what did you do with that? You said bossy. Have you seen him assert himself more in as a leader over these 5 weeks?
He's been a leader. So, what I mean by bossy is we don't hit something in practice. He's going to tell us how we need to run it, this, that, and we just look at him and be like, okay. And then when we get out there on the game, you just better make sure it works, because he's going to have some words for you if you don't. So that's him being a leader. He's a little bossy. No, just a little bro, so.
That's what you want. He's younger than I guess. That's what you want to see.
Yeah, you do want to see that. Like I said, he's like little bro, so you're like looking at him like, dude, don't be talking to me like that. But it's but I understand, because we need to really connect on that. And that's what we did this past week. So I took his advice. I listened. You know what I'm saying? Older bro had to take a back seat for a second.
Man, I love it, because it's kidding, but it's kidding on the square. There's a lot of realness in there.
Yeah, there's just a little twinge of
little bro, and just I want them to continue to be great on the field, but just a hint of I am the big brother in this relationship.
Yeah,
he's been bossy lately.
Yeah, I mean, he is the big brother in the relationship, but it's the quarterback. You got to serve the quarterback.
And Caleb was like standing right off to the side when he said that, I believe. Because I think that's how they ended up doing. Like, if you were looking at the video of it, like, DJ like gestured when he said that and kind of smiled.
He's been bossy lately.
Hey! He's the first one to scream on a track.
Even if he's not standing right there, you know full well Bears Media is going to serve it up to him on a platter a little bit later on.
Well, they did.
Yeah.
You know, Jason Leisure did. And we were wondering, because we couldn't remember if it was Leisure that brought the bossy up to DJ or if it was DJ that brought it up to Leisure. Now we
know. He's been bossy lately.
Mm-hmm. So Caleb had a chance to talk about that. And let's listen to Caleb talk about that. And then we can talk about this dynamic and kidding on the square and everything that is involved. Here's Caleb on finding his voice and leading the team.
How has the process gone from that to now being able to be bossy?
Bossy. Sounds a little sassy. You know what I mean? No, all good. I think partially it was me learning everybody and understanding how everybody, you know, reacts to certain things. Certain people you can be a little bossy with. Certain people you have to talk very monotone and control of yourself. Other times just people that you can just kind of lash out, and I don't really lash out much. It's not really my vibe, but you know, just always coming over to talk to, you know, the guys when I can. Growing up a little bit, understanding that even when I'm frustrated about maybe it was, you know, a drive, a play that we had that, you know, we may have messed up, or, you know, just whatever the case may have been, you know, understanding that, you know, there's another drive coming. There's another part of the season that, you know, we have to focus on also. And so, you know, being able to go over and talk to them, understand, you know, how and what they need to hear. And then from there, moving on. So I think the boss, and then the other part of it is getting more comfortable and understanding the offense a little bit better, getting more comfortable, you know, calling in things like that, being in games, being in the live action moments, I think has helped me.
Was it around the Indy game, do you think? I'm just curious when that was, because I remember coming out of Indy, you were talking about asserting yourself a little more with Shane.
Yep.
I think it's been
from the start of the season. I think there was things that we were getting better at, things that I need to be better at, things that and partially it was, you know, me speaking up a little bit more and, you know, not getting so annoyed and understanding, you know, what I need to say to people and how I need to say it, when I need to say it. And I think that progress has grown from the first game to now.
When you say, you know, how people react to certain situations, what have you found is the best way for you and DJ to get on the same page and have a game with you last week?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just going over there and talking to DJ. First, let the frustration, if it was maybe it was a good drive, so maybe no frustration, or maybe it was one of those drives that, you know, obviously we felt like we should have scored, or you know, should have gotten the ball some more, or anything like that. Go over, talk to him after everything settles down, whether it's good or bad. Go over, you know, talk to him, and just be right on the same level as he is. I think DJ's not a huge rah-rah guy unless he scores like y'all saw last week. Big bro, as he said.
Big bro and little bro, man.
Here's the thing, Lawrence. I think the DJ Moore stuff is surprise. Here's the quarterbacks that DJ Moore had in Carolina. He had Cam, of course. He was 29, already established in the league. He had Teddy Bridgewater. He was 28. Had a few stops already established in the league. Both guys, good leaders, we know. The two young quarterbacks that he worked with, you tell me if you think these guys are forward, outward, loud leaders that boss guys like DJ Moore around. Kyle Allen,
yes,
for 1 year at 23. You think so?
No.
And Sam Darnold at 24. Well, Sam Darnold might be there now, but it would surprise me if Sam Darnold was the kind of vocal leader.
No, not at that point. He was broken at that point.
I think this is DJ Moore being surprised that he has a quarterback at this age who can be as outward and vocal as Caleb is.
I think that's part of it, Shane. but it's also, this is an entitled, empowered number one overall pick, mm-hmm. young man. Like, none of those guys who you mentioned, who he's had success for, have had the pedigree and the keys handed to him like Caleb has. I'm sure that's an adjustment for DJ Moore.
And even inside of the relationship with Justin, it's DJ helping Justin.
Well, I was going to say, 2 years ago, and I don't want to make the Justin comparison, but a lot of the players are still here. But, like, remember, Spiegs, we talked about it. A lot of players, we wanted to be more assertive in the huddle. You know, to be more commanding.
They asked Justin to do that.
Yeah, they wanted Justin to bring the juice, like buzzwords like that.
Yeah, and no.
Clearly not a problem with Caleb.
Caleb comes pre-equipped with the juice.
I like it.
Dude, I like it. And we don't really know it. You know, like, you heard it just a little bit there. Well, once in a while.
I think I'm getting it.
No, I'm saying we've never seen it from the quarterback position in Chicago.
Oh, no, for sure. Never. But from Caleb a little bit there at the top, like, oh, he called me bossy, huh? I think that's a little sassy.
Sounds a little sassy.
Yeah. Somebody say sassy.
and him calling back at the end.
Yeah.
You know, like, so he was there for that and call, and like, I like that. He is willing to stand his ground in a very respectful way.
I said it to you guys a couple weeks ago. This is a whole ass adult. This is a 22-year-old who is more of an adult than the majority of 30-year-olds that we know.
And the position calls for it.
Yes.
The position demands it. The position demands it. And yeah, man.
That could be jarring for a lot of veteran players. And how you navigate that is interesting. And I love what this texter said. Texter was like, yeah, well, he scored 2 touchdowns and had a 100-yard game, so maybe do it his way, big bro. Yeah, maybe do it Caleb's way.
Oh, without a doubt. And it happens a lot that the kid quarterback coming in, that you have to do it his way, and I'm sure sometimes he's not worth it, but this kid is worth it. You do it his way. Look, I keep thinking about when Jalen Johnson told us a few weeks ago or a couple weeks ago about people having to put their egos aside. You know? Got to put your ego aside
it's
for the
hard
better
thing
of the
to
team.
Do.
Right. And who is that? I think DJ's one of those guys. And that's okay.
And I think that he probably just wanted to find out, hey, how can I help? Well, what are the things I can do to make sure that we get the ball, that we move it around, I can make plays? And Caleb is figuring that part out.
And it's cool that they're willing to talk to us about it and actually let us in on what the process is. All right, we'll do it the Caleb way. And that's that. I mean, I'm a all-pro receiver. I know what the hell I'm doing. I've done it with all the people that Shane brought up. I've done it with Kyle Allen. I did it with Sam Darnold.
Let me get you to the end zone. Let me get you there.
So, okay, fine. We'll do it the Caleb way. Oh, wow, look at that. That worked.
Look at that. It worked. And I got the
that's
ball
interesting.
All I wanted and then dropped a pass while I was
sure.
wide open in the game.
But I did it the Caleb way, and guess what? He threw a dot. He the pass was a dot, and it was right at me, and it was freaking perfect. So, yeah, do it the Caleb way. Hell yeah.
Let's do a little baseball. Russ Dorsey is in San Diego. Let's ask him about the craziness that was last night's game and the rest of the playoffs next here on The Score.
On an 0-2 pitch, a missile. Fernando Tatis Jr., electric.
This pitch is right down the middle. He's trying to go in, and this guy's so strong right now and so locked in. We talk about Shohei Ohtani and the great year he's had. This is the Padres version of Shohei Ohtani. Reminding the world how special he is.
Pretty epic moment last night.
Dude, that series has it all. And the Padres have some magic going. They've got crazy swag. They've got an emotional connection to a now dead owner who desperately wanted to displace the Dodgers with the Padres and be the kings of Southern California. And I'm so glad we get to talk to your good friend who is now going to be a part of things on this show.
Sometimes. Yeah, Russell Dorsey does an incredible job of covering baseball for Yahoo Sports. And he's nice enough to join us from lovely San Diego.
Jealous.
Hey, Russ.
What's up, guys? How are we doing?
We good, man.
Things are good. What was that Blink 182 moment like last night?
Oh, it was lit in there. And I think the entire record crowd of 47,774 were very excited for some Blink 182. And that place is absolutely electric. I know that people talk about like Citizens Bank Ballpark, great place to watch a playoff game. That place like that there, I'd put that up with any ballpark in the big leagues right now.
I'm really hoping the Phillies come back and take care of business because I want to see those two fan bases and those two ballparks in the NLCS, Russ.
I hear you. This is where I think these two series are going to go. I do think the Padres finish it off tonight because I think that was a kill shot for them after everything that had happened between game two and game three with all the talk and the stories written, and they come out and do what they do in game three. I do think it's going to finish tonight. Here's my thing in the other series. If the Mets want to win this series, they have to do it in their ballpark. Like you don't want to go back to Philly for a game five. Not saying they can't win in Philly, but it's a lot harder, and you probably have the crowd on your side, the energy on your side, doing it at Citi Field. But I hear what you're saying with the fan bases, San Diego waiting for a chance to get to the World Series, the Phillies feeling like they are in that moment in their window where it's like, all right, it's us or nobody else. So I feel you. I just think these two teams in San Diego and the Mets, they're not scared, right? They're not scared of the moment. They're not scared of, in terms of the San Diego, the big bad Dodgers with Shohei. The Mets aren't scared of the big bad Phillies with Bryce Harper and company. So that's what's made it fun for me.
Yeah, no, I dig it. But like, even last year, this is baseball. The Phillies lost game six and game seven at home in the NLCS last year. So it's like, because the Diamondbacks had that glow and had that magic in those arms. In this small sample, it's just freaking a bananas. But like, that San Diego team is pretty damn complete, isn't it? Just from like a team building construct, the way that it has ended up with good young players, I know Musgrove is now hurt, but there's legit starters now that Darvish is back and Cease goes tonight, and that bullpen is pretty remarkable.
This is the best job that AJ Preller has done as an executive, and it's something I've written about this year. Like, he's always been, you talk to people around baseball, he is the, you know what, let's make a big deal. Like, not let's just make a deal. Let's make the big deal, the mega deal. He's going big game hunting. You talk about Juan Soto and Josh Hader and going to get you Darvish. You bring in Machado. It's always about the big splashy move. And after the Soto thing didn't work, I think he looked at their roster and said, okay, we are very top heavy, where we have some of the best players in baseball, but we're not a complete roster. And I think you move Soto to the Yankees and you get back Michael King, who I don't know if a lot of people know about. He had a monster year, over 200 strikeouts, one of those starters that you were talking about. And then obviously you have your cornerstones and Fernando Tatis Jr., who's playing out of his mind, Manny Machado, who's the leader of that group. And then you have veterans like Darvish. You have a bullpen where at the deadline, when other teams are saying, ah, let's add this, let's add that, AJ Preller says, let's just have the best bullpen in baseball, shorten games. So when we get to October, it's like, well, if I can go Jeremiah Estrada in the sixth, Jason Adam in the seventh, Tanner Scott in the eighth, and Robert Suarez in the ninth, chances are you're not going to beat us that night. And that's turned out to be the case.
All three of us love baseball. You're out there covering it. And when you love baseball, you try to fix it a lot. Like, that becomes a thing. Yeah. I feel like baseball needs this blood feud between San Diego and the Dodgers. I am here for all of the sniping and everything else that's going on in this series, because I think fundamentally it's good for baseball that there is this much heat in this series.
And they're so close, right? Like, it's just a drive, you know, a couple hours down the freeway from LA to San Diego. And I think the fact that the Padres got over that hump a couple of years ago, beating the Dodgers to move on, and now they're on the precipice of doing it again to move on to the NLCS. And it's something I asked Fernando Tatis Jr. about last night, where I said, it feels like you guys aren't scared of the Dodgers, even though other teams around baseball may have been throughout the year. And he says, yeah, there's no fear, but that's something we've had to build over the last couple of years, because you know, you go from being a group that's never been there before, right? And so then it's the bright lights of the postseason, and everybody's looking at you as big brother, little brother. I don't know if people necessarily look at it like that anymore. I think people actually view it as a real rivalry now that San Diego has some juice and has gotten the best of the Dodgers over the last couple of years.
If we're thinking about the Cubs and team building and just like the sway and power of a superstar, you know, somebody who you give $300 million to and then they play like they're worth it. No, by the way, they have like some self-belief and some arrogance about it, you know? They didn't get Bryce Harper. They weren't really in on Machado. We know the White Sox were trying, but like you look at Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman and Machado, is like, what does it do to a team from your perspective when you've got that dude, Russ?
Speed, I think you know because you watched tons of baseball over the years. Those moments are going to pop up in a postseason, right? Runner on second and third, two outs, and your big bat comes up. And that moment's come up a lot for Fernando Tatis Jr. this postseason. And every time he's come up, he's delivered for them, right? He had a two-homer game in game two. And last night, the moment comes where the Dodgers give them extra outs in that second inning, and then it allows you to turn the lineup over, and who's up with two outs? Fernando Tatis Jr. hits a bomb. The whole city of San Diego explodes. That's what having a superstar talent, you know, the guy that you could say, hey, our big boy against yours, let's see who comes out on top. That's what they have. And they have it with Machado, and they have it with Tatis, where you have the veteran in Machado who's done it since he was 20 years old, top prospect in baseball, and has now built this, what will probably be a Hall of Fame career. And then this young gun in Fernando Tatis Jr. that has all the excitement and all the flash, but also had a moment where he had to mature after getting popped. And then you had the injuries with the shoulder, and you had some of the immaturity things that popped up. And now you get a second opportunity and a second chance at it. And he's thriving in those moments. That's what having a true young superstar does for a team.
Excellent as always, Russ. We appreciate it. Enjoy San Diego. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, guys.
That is Russ Dorsey, who covers baseball for Yahoo Sports and occasionally drops by here to talk baseball with us.
I love it when like super powerful, toolsy, athletic hitters are willing to go the other way and to go up the middle, man.
Pete Alonso.
Pete Alonso. Starling Marte with a big two-run single yesterday. That dude is like just happy to like, all right, what do I got to do? Xander Bogaerts has always been that guy, and that ends up being part of championship DNA, man. Just like your willingness to do whatever the hell the moment demands in the postseason. The Red Sox won a World Series because Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez were both willing to be that guy. Go ahead and get those stars. It's not always about their power. It's about their willingness to be that kind of hitter when it matters.
Yesterday, the two of us had a conversation about our shared experiences at Soldier Field over the last couple of weeks. The whole idea of building a new stadium came up again today. Surprise, surprise from who it came up from. We'll share with you and we'll discuss next year on The Score.
Postseason baseball is here and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.